Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, and I'm here today with my co-host, Dennis Hart. Hello, Dennis. It's great to have you here.
Hi, Gail. It is good to be here, and really good to be here on a day when we have a really solid lineup of stories for you on Local Talk. Later in the show, we're going to hear from Alex Fafar from the Ames Historical Society about an upcoming historical talk that they're sponsoring. And in our final segment, we'll be joined by Eric Smith, the new director of school, community, and media relations at Ames Community School District. We'll be talking with him about the upcoming Ames Homecoming and about efforts to improve communication between the school district and the public.
And a late addition is an enrollment update from ISU's VP of Student Enrollment and Success. But first, Dennis, it's Friday, and although you're co-host, it's also time for our weekly news roundup that you provide for us. There's been a lot going on, so fill us in.
There has indeed been a lot going on. It's been a busy week, so let's get started here. On Tuesday, one of the big stories in the Ames Tribune, the ISU Business School received a $50 million gift. That's right, the name of ISU's College of Business is going to be renamed the Debbie and Jerry Ivey College of Business, after the couple donated $50 million to the school. The contribution, the largest ever to the college, will establish an endowment that helps fund programs within the business school as well as scholarships and faculty support. The gift also goes toward the Iowa State University Foundation's Forever True for Iowa State campaign to raise $1.1 billion. Jerry Ivey graduated from ISU in 1953 with a bachelor's degree in industrial administration, and he now serves as the president and CEO of Auto Chlor System, a California-based company that provides cleaning services, dishwashing, disinfecting, and laundry to more than 75,000 customers. Debbie Ivey also works on Auto Chlor's executive team. Also on Tuesday in the Tribune, the Ames School Board looking for options to fix some pretty serious bus issues. There have been multiple issues with school bus services across the district this fall. So the school board weighed its options at Monday's meeting, including potentially canceling its agreement with Durham School Services and bringing the bus services in-house. Members of the school board spoke about the complaints and issues they've been hearing with the bus services since the school year began 2 weeks ago. Superintendent Tim Taylor calls those problems unacceptable. He said, "We met 3 days before school started, and we were assured about 70% that they were ready. And as we've kind of gotten into this, it turns out they weren't ready at all." He says the district's credibility and the credibility of our building principals is in pretty serious jeopardy. According to Taylor, the district is spending approximately $2.4 million on transportation this year, and he is not sure whether it's getting the service it needs. Now, several representatives from Durham were at Monday's meeting and tried to explain the issues that they've been dealing with so far this year. Durham Vice President of Operations Rick Klaus apologized, said that part of the reason for the bus issues due to lack of drivers prior to the first day of school, which he said has been common around the country. On Wednesday, the big story, the banner headline in the Tribune, the results of the school board elections the night before. And indeed, the Ames School Board is going to look very different when it meets for the first time later this month after three new members were elected on Tuesday night. Monique Binken, Jeanette Colton, and Gina Perez each won an at-large seat on the board. Incumbent Tim Rasmussen lost his re-election bid, coming in 319 votes behind Perez. The vote totals, Binken was the leader with 2,470 votes, Colton second, 2,333, Gina Perez, 1,733, and Tim Rasmussen, the incumbent, trailing with 1,414 votes. Turnout for the election was 8.63%, not great, but better than Ames has had in recent elections. So three new school board members going to be sworn in on the 25th. Monique Binken putting out a statement saying, "I am stunned. I'm thrilled that my message resonated with voters, and I'm honored that the community would embrace me in this way." Jeanette Colton said, "Never in a million years would I have thought that I would have been on a ballot for an election in the United States. That's a crazy ride when you think about it." Three new board members going to be sworn in. Congratulations to them. At the same time that voters elected those three new board members, they approved the community school district renewal of the tax that funds its infrastructure and technology initiatives. More than 86% of the total votes cast were in favor of renewing the physical plant and equipment levy, which taxes $1.34 per $1,000 of property tax valuation within the district. That tax is required to be renewed every decade, and now the tax is going to stay in place until 2028. Over the next 10 years, PPEL, Bebel as it's called, is supposed to bring in between $3 and $4 million annually, according to Superintendent Tim Taylor. That money is its own budget, kept away from the district's general fund, which is used mostly to pay teacher salaries and benefits. Also in the Trib on Wednesday, reports on the Gilbert School Board election. Incumbent and current board president John Nelson won re-election, and voters chose Deborah Ordell to fill the other spot. Also in Wednesday's Trib, a report on what happened at Tuesday night's Ames City Council meeting. Indeed, it was a long one, sometimes contentious, sometimes confusing, often complex. The city is being forced to act because the state of Iowa has passed a bill, which you may have heard about, stopping Ames from limiting rental occupancy to no more than three non-family members. Sarah Van Meteren of the city's inspection division told the council members about a neighborhood meeting they'd had at the library with residents and with several dozen landlords last month. She said the residents wanted some kind of new occupancy regulations, while landlords were split on that. She also said that she was told about increased enforcement of existing Ames ordinances. Many residents say they want that.
We asked what enforcement strategy was best, and the landlords agreed that reactive enforcement without occupancy enforcement is what they wanted. So they would wait for a complaint on a property before we enforced on it, and we would not proactively enforce on occupancy. The neighborhoods want to see proactive enforcement and occupancy enforcement, so they want a combination of both. We asked if the city should limit the number of rental units in an area. The landlords generally said no, and the neighborhoods said yes. And when we asked how, they both agreed that rentals per block might be the best way to do so.
Barbara Pleasance of the Ames South Campus Area Neighborhood Association told the council some kind of new occupancy rules are definitely needed.
40.5% of SCAN is rental property. And there's probably more we are unaware of, because many of them are not easy to find out. The state legislature has dealt us a blow that can hasten the destruction of our beautiful historic neighborhood. You can facilitate or stop this destruction by what you are deciding. I want to address the reasons why we must stop the encroachment of student, and I emphasize student, rentals in our campus-adjacent neighborhoods. I want to stress that the issue is not so much about rentals in general. We and most of us here started our adult lives as renters, but about the particular situation we face, again, undergraduate student renters.
The council took the first steps toward approving a six-month moratorium on new rental houses and duplexes in some neighborhoods near campus and toward limiting the rental of a single-family dwelling to a maximum of three students in those neighborhoods. And City Fire Chief Sean Bayuth talked about how the city could increase enforcement of existing rules about such things as rental maintenance.
When we look at what we're doing right now, we have two housing inspectors that they enforce the rental code, Chapter 13. They are responsible for about 13,000 units throughout the city of Ames. So they've got a pretty heavy inspection load. They inspect these units based on a frequency of anywhere from 1 year to 4 years, depending on how many violations they find. And so the compliance rate kind of adjusts that each time they inspect. And so that can change. Right now, when we look at it, since 2011, so in the last 6 years or so, we've had about 1,900 exterior property maintenance enforcement cases, and about half of those were rental properties. If we were to increase the enforcement and be proactive, meaning we drive up and down neighborhoods on a regular basis and look for items, we anticipated that would probably increase our workload by about 25%. It's an estimation. I mean, we can't say for sure. And then also, if council asked us to also look at overoccupancy and other nuisance complaints as well on a proactive basis, that could probably increase significantly their workload as well.
The council voted to start the process of adding one more enforcement inspector. Now, the council is going to revisit all of this and make some final decisions at later meetings. It's very complex. One more story from Wednesday's Tribune. Board of Supervisors has voted indeed to close that Squaw Creek Bridge we've been talking about, going to close to vehicle traffic this fall. This marked the third week in a row the board has discussed closing the bridge on West 190th Street between 505th and 510th Avenues. Supervisors said they wanted to give adequate time for anyone living near the bridge to weigh in on its potential closure. According to the closure resolution, the Squaw Creek Bridge will close in the coming weeks as soon as the bridge to its east, also on West 190th, reopens after construction. On Thursday, one of the big stories in the Tribune, a study that shows Ames is the best city in the entire country for career opportunities. That's right. According to a recent study by personal finance company Smart Asset, the study ranked Ames on the top of its list due to U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data showing the city's job market grew 2.2% between June 2016 to 17, compared to 0.9% from June 2015 to 16. Top 10 list, Ames number 1, Greeley, Colorado 2, Provo, Utah 3, Fargo, North Dakota 4, Detroit 5, Iowa City 6, Durham, North Carolina 7, Fayetteville, Arkansas 8, Columbia, Missouri 9, and South Bend, Indiana 10. Congratulations to the city of Ames. Also on Thursday, Justice is going to leave the North Grand Mall. Justice, a store selling clothing and accessories to preteen girls, going to close and leave the North Grand Mall at the end of the month. The chain announced it would close its Ames location September 30th, but intends to keep its locations in the Merle Hay and Valley West Malls open in Des Moines and West Des Moines. On a related note, from an issue earlier in the week, Harris TV and Appliance on Lincoln Way going to close in Ames after 61 years. Owner Wayne Harris said he's accepting an offer from a developer to purchase and redevelop his building on Lincoln Way. The deal could close within the next few months, but the last day to complete the sale, November 22nd. 61 years for Harris TV. Also Thursday in the Tribune, get set, property owners. The first half of the fiscal 2017-2018 property taxes due on or before September 30th. Penalty of 1.5% attaches October 3rd. Property tax statements were mailed out last month. By law, all property owners are mailed a tax statement even if they pay taxes through an escrow account. Property owners who pay taxes through escrow accounts or other third-party arrangements can consider the tax statement just an FYI. If you have any questions, you can contact the Treasurer's Office in Story County. One more note from Thursday. The City of Ames Dog Park scheduled to be closed for maintenance starting Monday. That's for all of you dog owners. The park is at 605 Billy Sunday Road. It will reopen once maintenance activities have been completed. Could be as soon as next Friday, so stay tuned for that. And what you'll read in today's, Friday's Ames Tribune, when it gets into your mailbox later today, front page story today. In his first and only annual address at Iowa State University yesterday, Interim President Benjamin Allen had two broad themes, the good things happening on campus and the challenges facing ISU. Among the good things, increased private financial contributions to the university, enrollment that is steady, and infrastructure development. The challenges, the proposed rollback of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA, recent racist flyers found on campus, and the increasingly challenging state budget situation. Allen's time in office is going to end late next month when the State Board of Regents scheduled to select ISU's newest president. Also in today's Tribune, supporters of the Miracle League Field and All-Inclusive Playground Project going to kick off their public fundraising efforts and announce hundreds of thousands of pledged dollars with a festival and benefit concert tomorrow at Ines Grove Park. It's going to take place from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. City Councilwoman Amber Corrieri says the project steering committee will announce at least $500,000 in contributions to the playground since the City Council gave its permission to build it earlier this year. One more note from today's Tribune, a reminder that the annual Ames Oktoberfest is going to take place tomorrow, starting at 1 o'clock on Main Street. Food and beverages will be available, and of course, polka music and dancing. What would an Oktoberfest be without that? Now let's take a look at some of the stories taking place in some of the outlying newspapers, the Nevada Journal. The big news this week, the Colonesco bond issue went down to defeat Tuesday. 60% of voters said no to the $11.1 million bond measure. It needed 60% approval to pass. And now, Colonesco Superintendent Steve Gray is warning that the district faces some very tough decisions. He said, declining enrollment trends and deteriorating facility conditions are a current reality. Long-term sustainability of this district will be difficult to ensure without proactive measures by our communities. Meanwhile, in the election for Colonesco School Board, John Fuller Jr. and Tracy Nessa were elected. In Nevada, incumbents Mark Crawford, Leanna Harder, and Tori Carsett were reelected. Meanwhile, the City of Nevada and the Nevada School Board have taken the wraps off plans for a new community recreation center. This latest plan would cost much less than the one they had previously been looking at. This one would cost about $4.5 million compared to the almost $20 million proposal that had been floated before. Included in the new proposal, a 33,000-square-foot recreation center to be built just north of the Aquatic Center, a new baseball field to be built north of the Rec Center, and Billy Sunday's existing baseball field will be turned into soccer practice fields. The Rec Center project will be funded through city bonds and a fundraising campaign. So they are going to try to raise a lot of money to build that rec center up there. And one more story out of Nevada. Nevada police reporting that several businesses had glass broken in their windows and doors recently. Whoever did it apparently was trying to get into the businesses, but only gained entry to one of them. Police say they did not, or they do have evidence that could lead to the perpetrators, and of course everybody in Nevada is hoping that's the case. Taking a look at the Boone News Republican newspaper this week, the big story is the outcome of several school board elections held in Boone County on Tuesday. Briefly, in the Boone Community School District, two at-large seats were open. They were won by incumbent Brian Melhouse and by newcomer Jeremy Pritchard. Residents also approved renewal of the physical plant and equipment levy. In the Madrid Community School District, two at-large seats up for grabs. Ellie Antonovich received the most votes, but Kurt Mathewson and incumbent Chelsea Badgley were tied. Who says every vote doesn't count? That means that the winners could be determined by absentee and provisional ballots. In the Ogden Community School District, two at-large seats were up for election, and incumbents Pete Bergstrom and Camille Sloan Schroeder, they both ran without opposition, so they won. And in the United Community School District, Brenda Erb Stanley was elected, as was Lori Weirich. And details have been released in Boone about an upcoming Battle of the Bands, which is going to take place in downtown Boone on Saturday, September 23rd. 10 bands with varying styles of music will take part, and they will play everything from blues to rock to country to alternative. That's going to be a very big event coming up in Boone. One more story out of Boone. Soldiers assigned to the Boone, Iowa National Guard made their way to storm-ravaged areas of Florida Monday to help with cleanup and search and rescue operations in the wake of Hurricane Irma, which made landfall, as you know, as a Category 3 and 4 storm, causing widespread flooding, damage, and death and destruction. The efforts were made in cooperation with Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and the Iowa Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. 19 soldiers, two from Boone, were sent to Florida on Monday. And good for them. Hopefully they'll be able to help out the folks in Florida who need it very much. Finally, taking a look at the Story City Herald. One of the big stories this week, the upcoming closure of Story City's Outlet Mall. Been there for a quarter century, and it's scheduled to shut down October 8th. The Roland Story City School District has offered to buy the mall for $540,000, but that's contingent on the passage of a bond vote for a new athletic stadium and auditorium updates. That bond election hasn't been set yet, but it's likely to take place early next year. And finally, and this is a big story for Story City, the 12th annual celebration of storytelling started last night, continues through tomorrow. And this is a big deal indeed. There's going to be a musical comedy performance tonight at the Grand Viking Hall. There's going to be a writer's forum held tomorrow at the public library on Broad Street. And storyteller Darren Crow, pretty widely known in the area, going to give a workshop on storytelling at the library tomorrow. Lots of folks should go and check that one out. But there's more. There's going to be downtown history stops tomorrow. That means reenactors are going to be in costume on Broad Street telling the stories of former business people who helped build that community. And storytellers will be spinning scary tales indeed tomorrow night at the Fairview Lodge. It's all part of what's called the Story Festival and More, underway right now, started last night, in Story City. And if you have not been up there to see it, it's a remarkable thing, a fun thing. And if you have been, it's still fun. So, Gail, will I see you up there?
I don't go to Story City often. I'm one of those Ames people who kind of stays in Ames, but you kind of motivated me to move outside.
That was my goal, then.
Okay.
That's the news of the week. Thanks.
And thanks for that. You pack a lot in there, Dennis. That was our weekly news roundup with Dennis Hart, which you can hear every Friday on Local Talk on KHOI. And while we were listening to Dennis, we've been joined by Alex Fahar from the Ames Historical Society, which is our next-door neighbor here at KHOI. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
Sure. Thanks for coming back. So the Historical Society often sponsors interesting talks that connect local historical events with national and even international history, and that's what you're going to tell us about.
Yeah. We, in conjunction with our current World War II exhibit we have about Ames and the home front, we have our what is our last of three, what we call history talks. So we build off of the exhibit, and we kind of do some events and some lectures to tie the two together and to get people, you know, into our building possibly that wouldn't be down there. So we're going to be having a lecture called Working with the Enemy, Foreign Prisoners of War in Iowa During World War II. And that's going to be presented by Dr. Chad W. Tim from Simpson College, who's done a lot of extensive research on the POWs and internment camps that happened during World War II. And if you've never heard about this, it's really a fascinating story. Part of the program we're going to be talking about specifically would be, you know, the overall what was going on in the nation at that time. So we're talking about, you know, the U.S. was sending a lot of ships overseas, you know, with all those tanks Henry Ford was making, and maybe some of those raincoats that were being produced right across the street here over at Collegiate Manufacturing in the Octagon building. And so they're bringing all that over to Europe, but the hulls are all empty. And so they're trying to figure out what they can do. And
the hulls of the ships.
The hulls of the
back.
Ships, yeah, okay. Because they brought everything over and they had nothing to take back. But so Great Britain kind of looked to the United States to help with their overcrowding of prisoners of war. And so they started to do these camps here, bringing German and even Japanese soldiers over to America to be able to kind of relieve some of the European theater of that.
You know, for those of us who were not around back then, this is kind of a shocking thing to think that Iowa held prisoner of war camps. How did this impact communities where this took place, where these were?
Well, I think it had probably both positive and negative effects. I think you had people who, you know, obviously were very adamant about not having the enemy in their backyard, I'm sure. But you know, Iowa's kind of interesting. One of the camps that we had was in Algona, Iowa, northwest Iowa, kind of around the area where I'm from. And there's a lot of Germans up in that area. You know, German, that's our highest immigration population here in the United States, or I'm sorry, in Iowa. And so they kind of saw it as a way, you know, there's still quite a few people speaking German. My little hometown, I think, still had a German newspaper even up until World War II. And so I think they saw that as a way to kind of help maybe make it easier on maybe the POWs and the people living there, because they kind of saw them as, you know, neighbors from a little bit of time removed there.
That's interesting. You wouldn't expect that kind of reaction to POWs. So he's going to talk more about that and research he's done on that.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to be doing that. That'll be at the Ames Public Library.
Okay.
On Tuesday, September 26th at 7 p.m.
All this ties in with an exhibit that you have going on right next door at your location. Talk about that.
Currently, yeah. It's World War II, Ames doing its part. So it's all about the Ames home front, what was going on in town here during those years from, you know, roughly about 39 to 46. And one thing that kind of really ties in with this, we have a little section on Grace Amamiya. And if no one's familiar with Grace Amamiya, she just passed away, sadly, last month or the month before that. But she was not born here in Ames, but she lived out in California. And she is Japanese-American. Her parents were American citizens. And when they started forming the Japanese internment camps over in California, her family was forced to sell everything immediately. They had to sell their house. I think they sold their car for like $50. They had to just get rid of it. And we're put in this internment camp, even though Grace was currently studying to be a nurse. So she got kicked out of nursing school and they were forced to go in here. So she was able to use some of that pre-nursing education that she got to help people in the internment camps, too. And finally, after they got out of it, she was still trying to get into nursing school to help out during the war. And her brother, I believe, signed up for the military, so he got in, and that kind of helped her a little bit, realizing that, okay, her brother is a true American or a patriot, whatever you want to call them. And so she used that to get into a few places in the Midwest. I think it was up in Minnesota that she finally got in. So she was realizing that the East Coast, West Coast was a little more politically divided than maybe the Midwest, and so she was able to get in here. Maybe some friendly Midwesterners let her in, I'm sure. So we have stuff like that. And I mentioned earlier about those raincoats being made here in Ames. So that was a company called Collegiate Manufacturing that made, before the war, they made all your college sweatshirts, pennants, stuffed animal needs that you could ever want for every college and major college in the U.S. So they started making these raincoats because they had lots of sewing machines, things like that. And so they were producing all those for the Army quartermasters. And so we have a couple of great examples of some Ames industries really changing completely over and doing other things. You know, that was a great big story. And they won what we call the Army-Navy E Award, which is a big deal. It was for exemplary service on war production. And there's quite a few people that got it. And Ames has three of them, actually. We got one for Collegiate Manufacturing, the Iowa State University. Iowa State College at the time got one for their work on the Manhattan Project. So that's the only E-award given to a public university. And then also Frank Spedding, who was in charge of the Manhattan Project research for Ames Lab over there, he got one too. And he's also the only individual to receive an E-award. So we have a couple unique ones here in town. It's pretty fascinating.
Collegiate Manufacturing, just a bit of history, founded by the Tilden family, which owned that store on Main Street for 102 years. Very famous family here. I was at your history talk, World War II history talk last month.
Yeah.
And Iowa's role in the war. That room was packed. So it seems to be generating quite an audience, what you're doing.
Yeah, we are. We've been packing that library ever since they built that new Farwell Brown Auditorium. I should throw a little shout out to Farwell there. He was our founder. And so he, for many years, worked out of the library before we got our own museum building with exhibits and storage. And so they had the past auditorium at the old library named after him and the new one. And we've been, ever since 2014 when that reopened, we've been really packing it in there, 150-plus some nights where they're standing room only at the back of the room. It's really been great. We love that the community is that involved. And we even hear we get people from out of town that come to see these sometimes. You know, sometimes it's the subject or, you know, if it's something to do with one of their family members. We've had people come from Wisconsin before driving the day of to get down here. So it's great how well the community has really been enjoying these.
So give us the details again on this one and also on your exhibit, which is wrapping up soon.
Sure, yeah. Yep, so this will be Working with the Enemy, Foreign Prisoners of War in Iowa During World War II with Dr. Chad Tim. And that'll be Tuesday, September 26th at 7 p.m. So it's about a week and a half away. It'll be a week from Tuesday. And that'll be at the Ames Public Library. And our exhibit is Ames, World War II, Ames Doing Its Part, and that'll be up till the end of the month. So be sure and come in and check that out. And then after that, we'll be transitioning to an exhibit done by the Vesterheim Museum up in Decorah, which is just a great museum. And they have a traveling exhibit that's going to come through on immigration. And so it kind of a little bit ties into that and some of the political atmosphere that's going on right now. So we'll have information about, obviously, like, you know, your Norwegians coming this way, some Germans, but we're also trying to get some newer stories, like, you know, some of our Vietnamese people that came during the 70s getting out of there. And even, you know, Ames is a very, very diverse community for Iowa. And so we really want to capture some of those newer stories that people, you know, when people think of immigration, they think of a lot of, you know, people coming over on the wagons and their trunks. But it's not always just that story. There's a lot of stories.
You have a number of great exhibits and a lot of information. Very briefly talk about when you're open, when people can access your building.
Sure. Our office is open on Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we have our big main exhibit, like we were talking about, World War II. But we also have a few little ones kind of scattered around the lobby, so you can kind of come check out. I think we have one up on actors right now and one up on the floods of 1990, 93. You can come relive all of that. And one about the building at Kellogg in Maine that is now housing the loft. So we got a little bit of building history on that, kind of saying what was through it.
And you've got some great aerial photos showing Ames from 60 years ago, downtown Ames, South Duff. It's really fun to be there. I've been there a few times, as you know.
Yeah, Dennis comes and visits me frequently. We chat about a lot of things over there.
Oh, so you two know each other.
We
already
know each other very well, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And when does the new exhibit on immigration sounds very timely. When does that open?
I'm sorry, I don't have the date on me for that, but it will be next month.
Okay, sometime during October.
Yeah, look into that. I think we have I think it's October 10th, but check our website. We'll be having that info on there. It's always great. That's ameshistory.org.
And we'll put the link to that on our website, as we always do.
Indeed. Hey, thanks for dropping by again today.
Appreciate it. Always glad to come by. Thanks a lot.
We have been talking with Alex Vahar from the Ames Historical Society. Thank you again for being here, and I'll see you probably next week with some other questions.
Yeah, come on down, Dennis.
About history. Of course, we all know that Iowa State students, they're back in town. You can tell by the traffic on Lincoln Way and South Duff. But KHOI wanted to get more details about ISU enrollment. So Joy B. and Ursula Rudenberg spoke with Laura Doring, the Vice President of Student Enrollment and Success at ISU. Laura gave us an update on this year's enrollment levels and some description of who ISU students are this year. She also gave us some insights from ISU's management perspective on how the university goes about recruiting and planning student enrollment and what they do to help students succeed. Apparently, many new practices have been developed in recent times in these areas.
This is Joy B., and my guest today is Laura Doring, the Associate Vice President for Enrollment, Management, and Student Success from ISU. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me as your guest today,
Joy.
Welcome.
Can you tell me this year what our total enrollment is for the students at Iowa State University?
You bet. This year, we have 36,321 students. This number includes 30,406 undergraduate students, almost 5,000 graduate students. So those are our PhD and master's students. We have 596 professional students in our College of Veterinary Medicine and 328 postdoctoral scholars.
Is Iowa State looking to keep its numbers up at the highest level?
Great question. Over the years, we've not been real deliberate about that enrollment number. You may know that we are in the process of a presidential search. And so as we await for our new president, my team's directive is a healthy enrollment. Around that 36,000 sort of window, it is not our record enrollment, which was in fall 2016 at 36,660, but that 36,321 is our second largest ever.
So what do you think affected these numbers?
Joy, that's a question that, you know, we will really be digging into as we do every year, the enrollment leaders and the enrollment research team. We will really be looking at where did students that we offered admission decide to go if they didn't come to Iowa State University. Our strategic awards, our financial aid awards, we haven't really increased those in a couple of years. And so, you know, are our strategic awards still carrying the same purchasing power? One of the things attributing to this being slightly lower is the fact that we had some very high, higher than projected graduation rates in fall semester. That certainly is one factor. Another is we have seen a bit of a decline in international students with the political climate. And so what we're seeing is that with regard to our continuing international student population, we continue to retain those students into years 2, 3, 4. But what we didn't see is an increase in our new international student population. Richness of diversity is actually one of Iowa State's principles of community. We were very deliberate about you are welcome here at Iowa State, and we'll continue to do that. Our international student population, as well as our U.S. multicultural student population, adds a richness and diversity to our campus that we need, want, and are very committed to retaining. We're very proud and extremely pleased to welcome what is our most diverse class ever this fall. The international students comprise 11.3% of what is our total enrollment.
What kind of countries are we looking at?
We have international students from 127 different countries. And the top 10 countries from which we enroll those students, China still is number one as far as where we recruit our international students from. Although we're seeing fewer students from China, following China is India, Malaysia, South Korea, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Taiwan, and 10 is Bangladesh. Now, that's the list for overall enrollment at the university. For our freshman class this year, we saw a little bit of shift in those countries as well. So the top countries for new students this year, China remains first, with India remaining second, and then followed by United Arab Emirates, Taiwan, Vietnam, Brazil, Canada, and Kuwait.
So can we talk about strategic enrollment?
One of my primary responsibilities now as Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Success is to create what will be a strategic enrollment management model at the university, bringing the entire university to a common understanding around enrollment. Over the last decade, Iowa State, of course, has experienced just incredible enrollment growth. But that wasn't necessarily strategic. It was just more. Strategic enrollment management isn't just about recruiting the class, you know, bringing in new students. It's also really about supporting those students, retaining them, and graduating them. So under a strategic enrollment management model, the goal is to be deliberate about how you approach enrollment, retaining students, recruiting students, what's the right mix of the class. Iowa State has 6 undergraduate colleges, and the deans in the colleges are definitely informing what will be that university and college enrollment goal.
So how are the students actually recruited?
We have a set of admissions recruiters that visit all of the Iowa high schools, and many of them have territories outside of Iowa as well. So you might have some that work Chicago, or you might have a recruiter that also works in Minnesota, Texas, China. In the state of Iowa, it ranges from visiting every Iowa high school. We have campus visits. We do pre-collegiate programming before they ever arrive at college, getting students through Science Bound or Upward Bound or Talent Search or just a variety of different programs. And we're really about fit because we don't want to recruit a student that we can't retain and graduate. We want that student to be successful. So we have a very sophisticated customer relations manager that helps us communicate with students, be in their space at the time they want and need certain information. It's very important to get them tied to their academic college or program. What we've not done in the past, and what is new with this position I now hold, is going out to the colleges and talking to the deans and their recruitment teams and saying, where do you have room to grow? All of our deans want to grow diversity. Some want more women in their programs, for example. So once I'm able to get a feel where each of the deans feel their optimum enrollment is, then we really can kind of go to work. The goal of strategic enrollment management is to be able to obtain what is that optimal recruitment, retention, and graduation rate. So we're all about not just bringing in more, but retaining more to graduation, boosting those retention rates also boosts enrollment. One of the items I'd really love to touch on is that Iowa State University's academic profile has not declined with the increase in enrollment over the last decade. So 8 years of record enrollment, no decrease in our academic profile. In fact, it's the opposite.
What's the most interesting part of this job for you?
I love that I have student success as part of my title because I have the privilege of being able to really touch that student journey, pre-collegiate even, from the beginning to the end, really contributing to a positive student experience that results in students reaching their educational goal, their dream. You know, that's the best part. Support the heck out of those students.
Yeah.
And just great opportunities for a bright future. Our university average placement rate, 95%.
That's
really phenomenal. When we know that they're having the kind of experience that prepares them to go out and get that job or go to graduate school, it's very rewarding.
Thank you for coming. It's been really fascinating.
Well, thank you. It's been an absolute joy to be here with you today and visit about Iowa State. In closing, I just wanted to give a quick call out to Iowa State's Learning Community Program and the person behind the scenes, Jen Leptin. Iowa State Learning Community Program has just been named to U.S. World and News Report list colleges with amazing learning community programs. And this acknowledgement really speaks to Iowa State's commitment to that learning living environment experience to retaining students through graduation. So it's really great to make that U.S. World in News Report list for amazing learning community colleges. So thank you.
Thanks to Joy and Ursula for bringing us that segment from ISU VP of Enrollment and Student Success. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI, and we now welcome Eric Smith, who is the new Director of School, Community, and Media Relations at Ames Community School District. Good morning, Eric. Thanks
for being
here.
Good morning to you. Well, thanks for having me on. This is exciting.
So this is going to be, you're going to be continuing the tradition of your predecessor who came in for monthly spots on Local Talk and just fill us in on what's happening in Ames Community School District.
Yes, yes. And I'm very excited to be able to do that. Believe me, we are never short of cool things that are going on. So we can do it more often, probably.
Well, if you have something special, you can let us know. But the monthly segment is really appreciated, and people get a lot out of it, I think. And today we're going to be talking about homecoming. And you brought with you two students who were willing to get up early. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves as they start telling us about homecoming, which is coming up. So, when does this all start and what's going to be going on for homecoming?
All right. Hi, I'm Ella Glenn.
And I'm Kelly Friedrich.
And we're the homecoming senior co-chairs this year. So we have a lot planned this week. It starts on Monday, and each day has a theme. So Monday is twin day at school, so you just pick someone to dress up with, and everyone matches. It's kind of fun. And then Monday night, there's a homecoming parade on Main Street. It starts at 6:30. Every parent's, like, friends go and throw candy. It's pretty classic fun.
And is the is, like, the band playing in that, or...?
Yeah, so the band, all the sports have a car parade.
And they have the clubs, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, have clubs.
The court will each have a convertible, like, each pair, so it's pretty fun.
So what's the court?
The senior class votes on three boys and three girls each, and then the top voted.
Six. Yeah. The top six girls and top six boys are all selected to be on court.
Hmm.
Yes.
Sounds like a pretty big deal. How many people take part in this parade? How many people actually march?
Our band itself is over 300 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I don't know the specific number, but there's just a lot of different people because we have a lot of different clubs and a lot of different things going on.
And then a lot of people just come to watch.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
All right, so that's Tuesday?
That's Monday.
Monday. Okay.
Yep, and
Monday?
Then on Tuesday, it's class color day. So we've assigned four different colors per class, and everyone participates in that just to kind of show your grade, and then we can all kind of intermix together and just interact with different grades, especially because now we know specifically which grades they're in, so maybe reaching out on Tuesday will be different than what we do every other day. So, I don't know. We thought that was a good way to kind of just mix everyone together. And
Okay.
That's fun. We don't have an activity Tuesday night. Both the swim meet and the volleyball game are away. So we encourage people to go watch, but some people
don't.
It won't
be at the high school or anything local.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wednesday is the theme day. So this year it's Get Groovy or like 70s themed. So people can wear tie-dye, like bell-bottom jeans, or really anything to get in the spirit. And
that morning, that Wednesday morning, we're having a pancake breakfast. So we'll have people from our committees that will just come together and we'll kind of all serve pancakes and maybe even smoothies this year. And we encourage students to come to that as well and staff. And that's just kind of a way to interact with people as well.
And Wednesday morning is late start.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's pancake breakfast is at 8, so it's not incredibly early. Thursday is we design two shirts every year. So Thursday is the theme day shirt, and people are welcome to buy them. They're $10, and we sell them all week. And then Thursday night we're showing a movie at 7 o'clock in the auditorium, Jaws. Kind of picked up theme.
Now, why did you pick that theme? Or that movie?
Jaws is, I don't know. We had a separate committee to pick the movie and everything set it up. So that's what they went with. And there's posters everywhere. So
And then on Friday night, we have a game day shirt that we have designed as well. So whoever has bought those, they'll wear them on Friday, or you'll just wear, like, spirit wear if you didn't buy a shirt. And then that night, we have a football game, and we encourage all the students to come out and just kind of enjoy that time together and just cheer on our little Cyclones.
Oh, and we have a fireworks show.
Yes.
At the
football game at halftime. So wow, that's a big attraction.
And who are you playing?
Yeah, none of us know. I'll win.
Eric's going to Google that for us.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
So I was at your homecoming football game last year. It was a big deal, and yeah, a lot of folks were there. Tell us about the spirit on campus. I mean, why is homecoming? This is 1 week out of your entire year. Mm. Why is this one such a big one that everybody will remember after their high school years?
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of students look forward to coming back to school, and it's exciting weeks. There's something to do every single day. The court is kind of a big deal for seniors, there's fun activities. So we have assemblies on Monday and Friday for the court, and the school gets all excited for them, and they play games, and, yeah, it just kind of lightens the mood.
Yeah, something throughout the week, it really does, definitely.
And why... before we went on air, I was explaining that where I come from, I don't really remember ever experiencing homecoming. I grew up on the East Coast, mm-hmm, and have lived other places, but I don't remember homecoming really happening. So why is it called homecoming?
I think it's just because all of us are coming back together, honestly, and it's just a way that, like, our town, not only just, like, Ames High itself, but our town and our families can kind of get together, mm-hmm, and, like, celebrate us all coming together again after being away for a summer and things like that. And also, all of our seniors and, I mean, all the other classes, too, but seniors specifically are super excited for this week as well, because it's kind of our last hurrah with Ames High, mm-hmm, until we all go our separate ways. So it's just kind of putting emphasis on, like, we're all together again, and this is the last time that we get to share this together. And so, I don't know, I think that's kind of our perspective on it as seniors.
do but, Ames, yeah, High grads come back? Years
so,
later?
Definitely. We have a lot of people that graduated last year that actually just went to Iowa State. So sometimes they even come to the football games to cheer guys on, mm-hmm, outside of homecoming week as well.
One of the big things is the dance on Saturday night also. So there's a dance from 9 to 11. It's just in the gym. But everyone comes, like, it's $10. So lots of people bring their friends. They dress up. I don't know. I think everyone looks forward to it. Mm-hmm. It's lots of fun.
And this for students only, not former students?
Yeah, the dance is only for current Ames High students. Yes. Okay.
And do you have a band or a DJ? Or?
We'll have a DJ. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a former student of Ames High, too. He does a good job, so that's fun.
Yeah.
So this is the week that students are going to remember maybe out of their entire last year, this week right here.
Yeah, yeah. I would say so. It's a lot of fun.
And so the dance on Saturday is the last thing,
yep,
of the week?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And so how many people do you have working on and planning this?
So we have about 20 girls on the senior homecoming committee. So each day has a committee, and then dance night, there was like a separate committee for DJ. So I think there's 8 different committees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have 2 junior co-chairs. Their names are Lindsay and Hope, and they organized all of court. Just so none of us know, because it's a big surprise.
Yeah,
everyone's been a lot of help, but it's gone pretty smooth.
So mm-hmm, quite a few people involved.
Yes.
But is it only girls that are involved in organizing?
This year, we actually had 2 boys, and I think it was probably one of the first years.
Yeah, they're involved in the pancake breakfast. They were like the first one to call dibs on that. But
okay, we need to call out these gender roles. Yeah. Why is it that the girls are doing all the organizing behind the scenes work? Right?
Maybe they're just better organizers.
Yeah, very well. Yeah.
But why do we have that gender role? I'm going to raise that question. No, you see that in a lot of different things. I don't mean to, but it's true. I mean, it really does make you wonder that boys out there, high school next year. Get involved.
Yeah.
Be involved in the organizing.
I think the boys have had a lot of fun, too, so mm-hmm, we encourage it.
The ones who did get involved.
Yeah.
When did you know you were going to be running this or organizing this? How long ago did you find out?
Well, last year we were the junior co-chairs, and then...
So you graduated to this. You knew you were going to do this.
Well, you actually have to get reelected, but usually if you did a good enough job last year, they just
kind of... a thing that...
Yes,
the norm is that you would then carry on and take the leadership.
Mm-hmm. So just briefly, how excited are you personally? Not the school. How excited are you two?
I'm really excited because, like, homecoming is something that I look forward to, like, every single year just because, like, this week, honestly, is so much fun and all of the themes that we have planned. It's, like, fun. It's fun if you participate in them. Like, you – I don't know. And definitely as a senior, I think that all of us are going to be participating in it. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think that's just something to look forward to. It's just a really exciting week.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it will be fun to see all of it play out after we've been planning it for basically all summer. We had stuff to do. So, I'm really excited to see everyone get involved and everyone wearing the shirts we designed. And, I think it will be a lot of fun.
Well, definitely. We hope it all goes well and all your organizational efforts pay off.
Yes.
And we encourage our listeners then to participate in the parts of it that are open to the public, the parade and the football game, so they can come out and support that.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for speaking with us. That was Ella and Kelly, the co-chairs of Ames High Homecoming. And before we let this group go, we wanted to take a few minutes to talk to you, Eric, about your position, because you're the new director of school community and media relations for the school district. And I know that you're making some new efforts at outreach and communication. So we'd love to hear a little more about what you've done so far.
All right. Well, thanks again for having us on. I think homecoming is going to be awesome next week. I actually had my first experience at a home football game last week when we played Iowa City High. It was like the little Cy-Hawk game. And the atmosphere, it truly is a community event. You know, the facility is awesome. The game was awesome. So this kind of goes into my position. If you really should get on the district's Facebook page and Twitter account, if anything, to check out the student section at last week's game. I mean, the boys did awesome on the field, but seriously, my highlight from that night was the student section. They were absolutely amazing. Seriously. You have to go on there. You have to check out the video.
All right.
Because
we'll put links to that
you
to make
should.
Sure people can find it.
I mean, so I can't imagine it's going to be anything different next week at our next home game. So anyway,
Eric, you're new to the position. What exactly do you think, briefly, is your role? What's your role in that job?
My role, for the longest time, you know, I have kind of a long title. I don't know if you noticed that. So Dr. Taylor, he always abbreviated it for quite a while by saying he's our new PR guy. And really, you know, when I came in this, you know, Kathy, my predecessor, she retired. And so when I came on and interviewed, I told the interview committee and Dr. Taylor, I said, you know, if you're going to bring me on into this position, here's the reason why you should. And I put a big emphasis on photography, on video, on graphics, and we push almost everything that I touch, I push through social media. And I think it's really it's starting to make traction. I think we're getting a lot more followers, and I've gotten some really good feedback as a whole as far as some of the exposure of some of the things that are happening in the classroom and at the high school and these community events. I think, you know, if people, they can't make it, then they can at least get a feel for what's happening within the district.
And is the idea that by using multiple channels like Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, you reach different people who might be tapped into those different media streams?
Yep. Yeah, and we're putting a lot of stories and stuff on our website too. But really, social media is where you really get to people. In addition to those things, you know, I'm excited about doing this every month. I'm getting a good working relationship with the Ames Tribune because they do a great job covering a lot of our events. And, you know, they're at school board meetings, you know, every other week, and they cover that really well as well. But social media is a way where we can instantly reach people who are interested in the school district. I think there are a lot more people in the community that have yet to find our pages. And really, that's the hard part about social media is getting people, you know, to your page. I think once they're there, they're really enjoying what they're seeing. So that's going to be, you know, the constant focus moving forward for me is to continue to talk about it and continue to push people to follow our channels.
Are you working closely, in addition with the superintendent, Tim Taylor, do you work closely with school board members, or whom do you interact with at the district on a daily basis?
The superintendent, I mean, he's just down the hall from me. I mean, him and I talk every day, and then everyone else really within that administrative building, but really a lot of the principals as well. I'm kind of one of the initiatives that we're taking on, and it's got to take hold a little bit. But each of our schools is getting their own Facebook page as well, or they have it, and that's starting to gain some momentum, so they're doing a good job with that as well.
Is that new? That hasn't
yes,
been
brand
the
new.
Case?
Okay. Yep, brand right. new. So in addition Great. To our district, so I manage our district page, and so we kind of have big picture stuff and then the stuff that I work on, and then they're kind of doing some of their own stuff as well.
Good. All right. Well, we look forward to hearing updates every month.
Absolutely.
And other times if there's things going on.
I got your email now, Gail, right. so you better watch out.
Good. And thanks again to Ella and Kelly for being with us as well. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I'm your host, Gail Seiler, and I'm here with my co-host, Dennis Hart, who also gave us the weekly news roundup. We want to say thanks to our guests. We had Alex Fahar from the Ames Historical Society. Again, the folks from the school district who were just here. And also heard from Laura Doring, ISU's VP of Enrollment and Student Success.
Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Thank you, Evan. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's very easy to donate or become a member. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the Donate button.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our volunteer team. If you would like to join, contact us at the station. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.
Funding for KHOI comes in part from the Octagon Center for the Arts, bringing you the Octagon Art Festival with original artwork, live entertainment, and a variety of food. Information is available at octagonarts.org. That's octagonarts.org.